Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. We got to catch up with Cody and Kevin from Crown Lands talking about their new album, Apocalypse, and diving into a whole lot of other stuff with them. Man, this interview aired on Wednesday, May 20th. Let's do it. I'm excited to be hanging with tonight's special guests as we celebrate their brand new album, Apocalypse. Cody and Kevin from Crown Lands, thank you both so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having us, Chuck.
So, listen, right out of the gate, I got to say congrats on this new album, Apocalypse. How's it feel to have this thing wrapped up and ready for the world to hear?
Thank you so much, man. It's a relief in many ways. It feels like it's been such a long time coming. You know, there was a really big break in between Fearless and Apocalypse, and of course in between we did the Ritual records and a couple other instrumental experimental records that might be coming out later this year. But this was our return to epic progressive storytelling form, and it just feels so nice to finally have this beast out in the world, man.
Right on. I love that. And you guys recorded this in your home studio, right? Which is where you did the Ritual albums?
For the most part, yeah. I think pretty much all the guitars and the vocals were, with the exception of the vocals on Through the Looking Glass and the drums for Looking Glass and Apocalypse. But everything else was done here. And again, we did the drums in the A room, which is next door from where I'm at right now. And it's this beautiful vaulted ceiling with a stone wall. It's very similar to Townhouse Studios out in London, which is where like all those famous Phil Collins drums are, and you get that really big epic drum sound in that room. But everything else, yeah, was done right here. And yeah, Ritual 2 was the first time we did everything front to back, from, you know, the writing, the producing, the mixing. The only thing that wasn't done in this room was the mastering. And then that gave us the confidence to, you know, take over a lot of the technical side of it on this record.
I was going to say, spending so much time in there on Ritual 2, like, yeah, that gave you that. I mean, Kevin, you use the word confidence, but yeah, it kind of set you up then to feel very comfortable in that spot.
Totally. I mean, we've written everything here since 2020. And we've demoed everything in the last, you know, for the last 5 years here. And it was just kind of one of those questions we were asking ourselves, like, why are we spending all this money to drive an hour south into Toronto and record everything in like a sterile clandestine studio when we could just do everything ourselves here? And it's just been really nice to be able to, you know, see through a vision like front to back in the same space that we love to be, because we pretty much live here. Maybe myself more than Cody, but I mean, I spend every waking moment I can here working on music.
Which is kind of a nice thing, right?
Oh, definitely, man. I mean, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing.
Yeah, it's such a privilege to do what we do.
Yeah, amen, man. Well, and you know, you've kind of alluded to this, but you really took this album on yourselves. I mean, you did that with Ritual too, but you did intentionally work with a couple of guys on Apocalypse, right? The producers, Nick Raskolnik and David Bottrell. What led you to want to have those guys be part of this?
Well, initially, we were chatting with Nick on how we were going to approach this next record. And we were thinking we'd do the whole record with him. And so we made this awesome arrangement to go down to his place, his home studio. And we started working on Apocalypse, and it was great. We did a couple sessions there. And then it became clear that he was just so busy. You know, he's such a cool dude. He's got too much on his plate. And so, you know, we asked his permission, like, hey, can we finish the rest of it? We're going to have to finish the rest of it at our place, you know? And so when we were at our place on our own, there was a couple songs that, you know, just needed that extra 10% bump on the top line. So we worked with our longtime collaborator, David Bottrell, and he was awesome. And we co-wrote like a couple tunes with him, and it got it the rest of the way there to be happy with it.
So I'm curious, you know, like as a fan, when you say that extra 10% bump or getting it to the place where you guys are like, all right, this is it. What does a guy like Nick or David, what do they bring to the table that helps you get to that point?
They come from two totally different worlds, two different schools of thought, where David Bottrell's more of a precision kind of guy. He focuses a lot on the top line, on my vocal. He'll kind of get me out of my head to sing on the beat instead of on the end of the beat, and really drive the melody so it's just hitting on a certain spot, which is super cool. Like a totally different approach to Nick. Nick is more of like a vibes-based dude. We go down there, the hang is absolutely immaculate. It's hilarious. We're just giggling, like we can't stop laughing. It's so good. But he just drives us in a different way. Like for myself, he pushes my drumming to like another level. So like working with him on Apocalypse drums, like was just absolutely necessary to get that performance. But he's kind of more of like, he'll feel it out and he'll be like, he'll throw a suggestion and it'll totally be different from what you'd planned or what the demo was. For example, for, you know, Revenants, there was drums on the demo. And then when we worked with him and Kevin to track that guitar, he's like, you know what? I don't think there's drums on this. And I was like, dude, what?
You know, like, Cody was crestfallen about that.
No, sad.
No drums for a drummer.
But it made sense, and it makes sense when you take a step back, you know. But he's got that vision where he can kind of just be like on the fly. He gives you this amazing piece of advice. So yeah, two different people, two different approaches.
I think for the most part, why we go to these guys is there's often stalemates in the Crownlands world where there's no democracy in this band. There's two people. And so if there's a disagreement, nothing gets done. And things sit in stasis for far too long. And so when you go down, work with somebody like Nick, he will very quickly tell you if something is cool or not. And that just allows us to kind of move on and just, you know, go ahead with what, you know, what the vision is. And then with Bottrell, it's a similar thing where, you know, you just need an objective ear sometimes. Sometimes you're just too close to the process. And that was another reason why we got David Bottrell to mix this record where,
yeah.
I was really surprised when we went back and listened to the board prints of these songs on the record. They're not dramatically different. There's just that, again, that extra 10% of polish on the final product. And you need that. You need somebody else who, you know, isn't as close to it and wasn't there for the entire recording process. And, you know, when you're working with other people, it's usually like the first or second take, especially with Nick. Nick he loves the first or second take for my guitar parts, whereas when I'm recording and producing it myself, it's like the 30th take. And I think all of the vibe is removed because I'm like, it's got to be absolutely perfect. No, you know, no fret squeak or nothing. Whereas Nick is like, that was good, dude. I'm like, was it? He's like, yeah. Did you make a mistake? No. Then why do you need to re-record it? I'm like, wow, what an interesting perspective. You know?
Yeah.
But David Bottrell is a very different way, whereas he'll, you know, for the drums, you know, if, you know, like I was engineering and Bottrell was producing, especially on The Fall, to really get that like super robotic thing, he would punch Cody in every measure, I think, at after a certain point, we're punching in every single measure just to make it like super like locked in. And different approaches, but it leads to, hey, we sound like us no matter what. So what are you going to do?
Right.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. So listen, I got to ask the closer on the record, the title track Apocalypse, it's this massive 19-minute epic. Can you walk me through how a song like that takes shape? Like it's such an ambitious thing, right? To not simply create a 19-minute song. I mean, anybody could do that, but you create a 19-minute song that holds your attention the entire time and takes you like on a legitimate journey. Like, where does that begin for you guys?
So this particular one started with a demo that I sent to Cody a few years ago, and it was like an 11-minute demo. And I'd say the first like 6 or 7 minutes of that actually made it to the final, like structurally. And it basically ended before the plea of the Ebon Flight in Apocalypse, right? So like right before everything really takes off and goes to 11. And it's one of those things where, you know, Cody was excited about that first bit. And then the last half, actually, some of it ended up being about three times as fast at the end in a different section, in the second battle section. And that's often what happens is we will kind of come up with the basic structure. And then we start jamming all of these riffs, right? Because a lot of the riffs, like the Asteroid Belt, was an idea that we had a couple of years ago, and we had toyed with releasing that just as an instrumental song. But it didn't, luckily, it didn't make it that far into the production process, and it really helped us tell that part of the story. But most of the time, like, we just sit in this room, and at that time we were demoing in Logic instead of Pro Tools, which is not really friendly to recording multiple takes as Pro Tools is. It's not as flexible. And so because of that, we would just like punch ourselves in, like we'd play along to the song because we'd write a new idea and we'd play along to the song and we'd punch ourselves into that part. And very much the way like Yes used to record, where you're doing that and you hit the tape, you know, and you record it. And then you listen back and you're like, oh, does this feel like it belongs there? Great. Okay, what's the next part? And it would almost be like musical journaling. And then we get to the point where it had like a 22, 23 minute demo. And it's all just like recorded live off the floor. And it sounds pretty raw with no click track. And then you keep refining it, refining it. We showed Nick Raskulin, it's that demo. And he was stoked about it. He was thrilled. He's like, this is the best thing you guys have done. Go and refine it. And so we did. And Cody and I spent like 2 weeks tempo and time signature mapping a Pro Tools stripe, like a guide guitar. And we just mapped out every time signature change. And it's one thing to look at each other and be like, okay, we're going to seven now. Okay, go, you know, or now it's seven and six, or now it's five. But it's a whole other thing to program all those tempo changes and time signature changes and ramp ups and ramp downs and tempos, you know, because there are a lot of ritardandos, you know, and mapping that out took about 2 weeks. It took longer, I think, to map out the Pro Tools session than it did actually write up most of that music.
Yeah, there was a free time section in the middle with like a drum fill thing, and I remember it took us like the better part of 2 days just to get that. We were trying to vibe map that out, just like, oh, it feels like I'm going like one bar of six, another bar of seven, two bars of two, and it's or one bar of two, and then a bar of three. And it's like, this is nuts. But we did it.
Yeah,
we did it. But yeah, I think the hardest part of the process is, like you said, maintaining, you know, keeping someone invested into something so long. It's the biggest struggle we have. Like when we make this, when we made Starlifter, it was no different. You know, we kind of test ourselves. Is this like engaging enough? Do we have to go down here? Do we ramp up the energy here? And it's just a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, I think a lot of progressive music that falls on the heavier side, especially these days with the modern production techniques, struggles with ear fatigue, especially with a longer piece of music. And with modern production, modern compression, it can just end up becoming white noise very quickly. And it's so easy to tune out. And that's something we really put a lot of effort into, is figuring out dynamics and where the ebbs and the flows are in the storyline and in the music. And so that way someone who is listening to like a 20 minute song isn't just getting blasted the whole time. And I'm really proud of Apocalypse for that reason, where I think it tells a complete story musically as well as lyrically. I think it's our best work yet. And can't wait for the next one, dude.
That's right.
Which, I mean, what a great feeling to be able to say that, right? Like, of course, you want everything you're creating to be the best one yet. But, you know, to really feel that way about the final track on this new album, like, I mean, obviously, but what a great feeling.
Yeah, it is totally a great feeling, man.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, as you guys talk about this, I mean, clearly the two of you work so well together and you create these universes and you're so in it. Every single detail. And I think that's important. Like, it is the two of you. Yeah, you have Nick, you have David, but at the end of the day, it's the two of you. And that's obviously caught people's attention. You know, a few years ago, Gene Simmons shouted you out for exactly that in a Rolling Stone interview. Were you always committed to Crown Lands being just the two of you from the beginning?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, well.
I would say, like, it wasn't like, oh, we have to
do it
because we're a duo. I think it was just like, it was a, it was like a necessity at the very beginning. It was because we couldn't fit anyone in my dad's Elantra. I mean, it wasn't like it was, Yes, it's just it was just, you know, it was one of those situations where he had no room for anyone else. But you go, Code.
But off the tail of that, we quickly realized, you know, when we wrote our first EP, we're like, damn, this works really good. Let's just like keep it this way, you know. So, yeah, I guess I didn't go as far as like the first moment we stepped in the car together. But
it wasn't like, you know, we had to be a duo, but it was one of those things. Yeah. Like, sorry, I should say. After we wrote the first the Mantra EP and then the Rise Over Run EP, it definitely felt like this was our shtick. Mm-hmm. And then we just kept leaning into it more and more. But the feedback that bugged me more than anything was, you guys are good for a duo.
Yeah.
And that really bugs me because I would just want to be good. And you know, like Cody and I are true multi-instrumentalists. Like we play a lot more than just the instruments that we do live on stage. And we want to be able to express ourselves in the studio and make a piece of art that reflects everything we want to hear. And we toyed with it a bit on Fearless, but on Apocalypse, it's so much further developed where we've finally made a record that sounds like symphonic progressive rock. And because of that, there's a lot going on. There's, you know, a lot of bass, there's a lot of keyboards, a lot of guitars, some flutes, you know, there's all, you know, vocal harmonies. We've definitely pushed ourselves further into that Crimson, Genesis space, where it's not just like a hard rock duo. There's a lot more going on musically. And on stage, you know, we have the rule of like no backing tracks, right? Because I mean, nothing against some artists that use backing tracks. Different art forms require different concessions. However, if you're into progressive rock, I don't think there's room for tracks in that world. I think it's just not a crutch that really is afforded to people in a genre that celebrates athleticism and musicality. And so because of that, we realized that a lot of this record was going to require a couple of extra players on stage. And so we fell into the, oh, it has to be the duo. Otherwise the music isn't interesting. And I think we were afraid, just as much as we were frustrated with the qualifier of you're good for a duo. I think that, you know, that bugged me, I think, more than Cody. But what bugged Cody more was the idea of bringing in live performers and bringing in a couple of extra people, because it's like that fear of, do people like us for a music or do they like us for the circus act where, you know, we pull everything off live with no trickery. And so on the last tour that we did this headlining run where we did three sets. One set, we did the ritual music in disguise as the Dragon Riders of Caragon. And I really had fun doing that. I think it was so fun because we were wearing these big like space druid hoods and no one could see anything on stage. Like I couldn't see my guitar. Cody couldn't see their flute. And I feel like that, you know, like having your senses dulled like that just, you know, really, you know, tunes you into the music more, I think. And then we did a duo set where we did a 45-minute set with Cody and I. And then we brought on, you know, we did like a costume change and we brought on Daniel Walton on bass and guitar and Adam Enrig on drums and keys. And so we went into that 80s Genesis way of, you know, in the studio, it's Cody and I, just as in the studio, it was, you know, Phil, Tony and Mike. But then they brought on Chester and Daryl. And I felt like the dynamic of that live show was always so exciting where, you know, Phil Collins would run around the stage drumming and singing and vice versa. And I always feel like Cody has the potential to be, you know, this generation's Phil Collins or this generation's Cody Bowles, right? Where there's no one really out there who can sing like that and drum like that, right? And it's been really fun watching Cody come into their own, playing into the Blackstar persona and the theatricality. And it's just fun for myself too to take a breath and not, you know, I mean, I'm still doing my Taurus pedals for other things, but I, you know, because I love it. It's like a safety blanket. But it's nice having somebody else to help us with like the harmony and and melody.
Yeah, it was cool to actually be able to take a step out from behind the kit, even though I was so reserved and so against it before. After we did it, it was very liberating to be able to walk around and to see how easy it is to just sing for once.
I love that.
Yeah, go figure, eh? Like when you're, wait a second. It's only doing one thing. That's easy. Yeah. And that's one of those things like bands have it way easier than duos do, don't they? Like, you know, if you have everyone like not having to do multiple things, my God.
That's right. Yeah. We should be saying, oh, that band sounds pretty good, you know, for a five piece. that should be the qualifier.
Yeah, exactly.
So listen, I mean, we've talked a lot about music, but on a deeper level, you've committed yourselves to speaking out against, you know, different things, colonialism, you know, obviously with your name, Crown Lands, and in Canada, you know, the idea of the government taking land from Indigenous people. What inspired that for you to commit the music, the band name to this from the very beginning?
Yeah, well, you know, we feel like as artists, you have a voice, you have a platform. Everyone has an opportunity to say something. And, you know, it wasn't lost on us that, like, you know, all this stuff was going on around us and we saw it. We didn't see enough people talking about it or elevating people's voices. And so we felt it was like a duty, like a responsibility to ourselves and as people to elevate these voices and to talk about these things because they matter. You know, it's like we'd rather speak out against this stuff than put our head in the sand and kind of delude ourselves that it's not going on, right? Like once you kind of see what's happening, you can't unsee it. And we felt very strongly about that. And we still do feel very strongly about that and supporting these issues, awareness in the world, you know, and we continued that on this record too, just in a different way, you know?
Well, and I think that's, it's really cool too, and really important for a rock band to do that, for a heavy band to do that, because, you know, obviously like Buffy St. Marie, you know, comes to mind as a crown jewel in that, and, you know, Neil Young or Willie Thrasher, who I love, and nobody, most people listening are going to be familiar with Willie Thrasher, but then for, you know, this like progressive rock band to also do that, I think that's so important.
Yeah, I feel like... Yeah, I feel like rock has just become so safe and so sanitized and so like, just so safe. And it's like, why? What's the point? You know, this isn't the point of rock and roll. Rock and roll was like to rebel, to like to push against that, to not fit inside that box. And, you know, we're very much of that ilk and pushing that forward.
So, what's next? I mean, you know, debut album came out in 2020, Fearless 23, Rituals 1 and 2, 2025, Apocalypse less than a year later. You know, Kevin, you kind of hinted at like, ready for the next thing. Like, are you guys always kind of thinking about what's next?
Yeah, dude, we're already demoing the next record. We've got the storyline charted out. We've got a lot of raw music that's just being like ever refined. And it's just about laying it down, man. It's just about putting it all together and like grabbing these pieces that are, luckily they're not so much in the ether anymore. It's starting to congeal. It's starting to solidify. And I'm really excited. I think we're pushing ourselves. We're always, you know, pushing ourselves rhythmically. There's so many more polyrhythms on this new piece of music that we've been working on. Yeah. Harmonically, it's just very, very interesting. I've been pushing myself further. Like I've really been pushing myself lately because Adam, who played drums and keyboards with us, he studied the Genesis songbook and he can play like all of like the Tony Banks keyboard parts. And so like I've been like studying a lot of Genesis myself. And I actually just got this book by Trey Gunn, and it's all of the 80s King Crimson transcriptions, and it's all like it's a score of like all of the parts that Bruford played on drums, Tony Levin did on the Chapman stick, and Adrian Blue and Robert Fripp's parts, and it's all transcribed in sheet music. And so I picked this up, I literally just got it in my hands yesterday, and so Cody and I are going to be working through that just to kind of teach ourselves what the heck those guys were doing, because I feel like that's some of the most challenging music I've ever listened to in my life. And I think it fills Cody and I with so much joy, where it's music that you find something new every time you hear it. And so I think we're going to spend some time studying that, of what makes that music tick, so that way we can start employing that, because we've been doing that blindly for years of trying to understand what these guys were doing and translating it into our own stuff. But I'm excited to get into that.
Yeah, if there's any constant with Crownlands is we're always trying to kind of get better as musicians and learn new things and apply them to our music.
Amazing, man. That's great. And yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, you've done so much, but it sounds like you're, you know, kind of just getting started too. And I kind of love that, man. Cody,
in so many ways, yeah.
Thank you both so much for hanging tonight. Starting.
Thanks, man. Yeah, you too.
Celebrating Crownlands, celebrating this new album, Apocalypse. Listeners, get everything you need and stay caught up at crownlandsmusic.com. And let's do this again. I know we're just scratching the surface. Hopefully this is the first of many more conversations in the future. You both are welcome back on the show anytime.
Thank you so much, Chuck, man. It's been such a pleasure to chat.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights On Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.